when this mass shooting took place in Wilkinsburg almost 4 years ago, it'll be 4 years ago next month, it got national attention. When police made two arrests in this case, many people, well, I guess it was kind of split. Some people felt like, okay, they've made an arrest in this case. Other people felt like, well, did they get the right guy? So then the whole thing went to trial. And then just before the trial started, one of the two people, the charges were dropped. The other one, Sharon Shelton, went to trial. Trial lasted a couple weeks, lots of twists and turns. Now, after several days of deliberation, a jury of six men and six women, after 4 days of deliberation, came back and said, not guilty. Raises lots of questions, lots of questions. Joining us now on the Disc Institute of Pittsburgh Newsline is Pittsburgh criminal attorney. I guess now, do I always have to introduce you as criminal attorney extraordinaire, Blaine Jones?
You know, Lynn, I wasn't going to say anything until I heard that adjective, so I'm glad you did. I'm ready to roll now.
So I got to tell you, Blaine, after all the twists and turns in this case and as long as the jury was out, I think people were surprised that they came back with a not guilty verdict. I think a lot of people were expecting a hung jury at the very least. Were you surprised?
Well, you know, Lynn, first of all, good afternoon to you and all of your listeners, and thank you for having me on. But, you know, count me in that group, Lynn, because the longer the jury was out, I thought one of two things would happen. I thought, number one, the jury, you had members of the jury that were in one camp and another group that was in another camp. And I thought what would happen was they would come to a verdict, and I call that verdict a compromise verdict. So one group wants, say, murder one. The other group wants involuntary manslaughter, so they settle on murder three. I thought that was one possibility. The other possibility, I thought, was that they were hung. In other words, they were deadlocked, that neither side was willing to agree with the other side. If that happens, then the judge would declare a mistrial. So I'm a bit surprised, but then when I took a look at it comprehensively, you know, unfortunately, it seems like there was a lot to this trial, whether the first young man being excused from the case. The jury, remember, when the juries went, or I'm sorry, when the potential jurors were picked, there were two defendants. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden, right before the trial, there's one defendant. So the jury's not dumb. That's number one. And number two, there was a report of a young man that came forward saying that he was allegedly paid. And I know juries aren't supposed to look at outside sources, but I always wonder how true that really is. And not only that, they have spouses, they have loved ones talking about things they hear on the news. I think that's a part of it. So I'm not completely surprised when I step back and look at it with a wider lens.
So we look at this case, and we're coming up on the fourth anniversary of these shootings. It'll be next month, March. And we've had this extensive trial, and it's kind of complicated because you had five victims, an unborn child, all from the same family, and now there is no resolution for that family. Do police just start from square one? Do they go back? They couldn't charge him again. They couldn't charge Mr. Shelton again. Do police even start again? I mean, one of the things Randall McKinney said is that he believes they zeroed in on his client and only his client from the beginning. What happens in a case like this?
Unfortunately, you know, from the side of the victim's family, you're right, there is no resolution because no one has been found guilty. And the problem procedurally with the DA's office saying, hey, you know what, we're going to go after defendant C. We went after defendant A. He was dismissed before the trial started. Went after defendant B. Can't go after him again because jeopardy is attached. He was found not guilty. So now if you go after defendant C, let's look at it from a practical standpoint. Who in Western Pennsylvania hasn't heard about this case, number one? And number two, if I'm the defense attorney, guess what? I'm bringing up those other folks, and I'm saying, for 4 years, this is who they honed in on. Now all of a sudden they're coming after my client? So that's a tough one for the detectives in the DA's office to now try and start again and go after someone else. I think that's a tough one, Lynn. I don't see that happening.
This may be an unfair question for you, and I apologize up front if it is, but, I mean, the district attorney's office has taken some hits during this trial, and there have been lots of motions filed, there have been lots of allegations filed. Does anything that we've seen in the motions filed by these defense attorneys rise to the level that there could be some legitimate questions about how they handled this case?
I can tell you that this case in particular, from afar, seemed to be very acrimonious with respect to the DA's office and the defense attorneys. And I can tell you, after practicing law in Western Pennsylvania, primarily in Pittsburgh for 16 years, it's usually not like that. It's very amicable. To answer your question, Lane, I think there's going to be some blowback from this one. I think that you know, the DA's office, their attorneys, you know, in terms of dealing with defense attorneys on certain cases, it may be different moving forward. This may be the case that has put down a marker in terms of the relationship on certain cases with defense attorneys.
I mean, we heard a lot about jailhouse witnesses in this case. I mean, yeah, we even saw a guy who says, I mean, he was on the front page of the local paper the other day. That unprecedented? I mean, and then all over social media yesterday, people were speculating on whether or not he should have identified himself. Did he put his life in danger now? I mean, it's like it's taken this whole thing to another level.
Well, yeah, that's the problem with this case. It seems as though there was a sideshow going on and no one can control it, because one of the things the judges want to do is they want to make sure that the universe of the trial is closed. It's closed caption. No one, you can't look at any outside sources, et cetera. But like I said in the beginning of our conversation, you know, jurors are members of our community, and to go home and they may see the newspaper, they may see the news, and I think that could have played a part in their decision-making. In terms of jailhouse informants, Lynn, I can't tell you how many times, we spoke about this earlier or a while ago on your show, I can't tell you how many times that happens. It happens all of the time. It happens all the time, and you never know whether or not the person's credible. With respect to the person who came out and talked, I got to tell you, I was surprised he didn't cover his face or blur his face or change his voice, because, you know, you do things like that and the streets remember. So I'm a little surprised that he identified himself in such a manner, but that shows you how, not shouldn't that shows you, but perhaps that gives you a glimpse of how of his credibility.
Indeed. Blaine Jones, always a pleasure, sir. This was an interesting one indeed. Thanks for breaking it down for us on so many occasions. We appreciate you.
Thank you for having me, but you forgot to wish me a happy Valentine's Day.
How do you know I was done? But happy Valentine's Day to you and your wife, sir.
You as well, man. Have a good weekend.
All right, you too.